Now, for the last few days, the talk of the town, at least in the ancient history side of the internet, has been this paper here that claims to push the dating back of the origins of written language by over 30,000 years, which is amazing. A staggering claim, if you think about it, the kind of thing that makes alternate historians say, ha ha, told you so, things just keep getting older. And on the flip side of that, we get the skeptics and the archaeologists that are like, whoa, 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 man, this isn't the first time that they've made a paper like this. This isn't the first time that we've seen this. This isn't the first time we've seen this claim. And it's a proto-written language. This isn't a fully-fledged written language like cuneiform. So, in order to not take either side's word for it, and I can't just read the papers and take its word for it, because I'm going to go out on a limb and say the authors are going to side with themselves, I've taken the last paper that was also on this topic, which for those of you who've watched me in the past, you know I've discussed this relatively recently, in fact, as a matter of fact, in the same area as this recent paper with the Ordination Culture. So anyway, I've taken the most recent paper I could find from last summer, and then the one that just came out a few days ago, and I basically compare and contrast them. We'll see why this new paper makes the claims that it does and why it's being considered, you know, somewhat special and different, and we'll see why the skeptics are saying there's nothing new to see here. And maybe we'll actually learn something. Maybe we'll advance our knowledge a little bit. We will. Anyway, sit yourself down and buckle to it. I'm a professional wordsmith, guys. Hi, my name's Dan, and welcome to Dedunking. Now, the first paper discusses evidence for the recording of numbers in prehistoric times. The title of the paper gives that away. It's Identifying Potential Paleolithic Artificial Memory Systems via Spatial Statistics, Implications for the Origin of Quantification. Now, this is a mouthful, but if you understand the terms, the concept's pretty simple. An artificial memory system, that's just anything external that you use to help remember things, like writing or a cat video or a tattoo on someone's back that tells you where the last dry land is in the world. Any of these things can be used as long as it's, you don't have to keep the memory here, you put it over there. So they look for these artificial memory systems, or AMSs as they'll frequently be called, with spatial statistics. And this means they measure the distance between markings and analyze the results mathematically. Finally, we have the implications of the origin of quantification, with quantification simply being the act of using numbers to weigh or measure or even just simply count stuff. So this paper isn't merely focused on the origins of written language, it hones in on numbers. And there's a couple reasons for this. The first being obvious, we don't know what language they spoke, so we can't say this character made this sound because we don't know if they made that sound. We can't say this character means this word because we don't know if they made that word. And the second thing is, the origins of writing have always been assumed to be attached to hard data, and this has been backed up by what we find in the record. It's, you know, logs from E.A. Nisser and people yelling at him, and numbers, the kinds of things that you can't really get wrong, okay? And so, at the end of the day, what we have is two different things that limit us to basically looking at simple yet hard data. So numbers are a great place to start. Even in a Paleolithic society where stone and bone are the tools of choice, if Krang owes Grok 16 obsidian arrowheads, you know, next week Grok may say that it's 17 and Krang may say that he only owed him 10. So the idea here is that keeping track of numbers with the system of tally marks could potentially be the origins of written language. As the paper puts it, some traditional societies of hunter-gatherers, fishermen, pastoralists, and horticulturalists have also exhibited the use of artificial memory systems to exchange messages, track time, navigate, record quantities, and as an aid memory in recalling prayers, rituals, and narrations. Ethnographic evidence suggests that artificial memory systems may have existed in various parts of the world long before the emergence of complex societies, writing, and numerical notational systems, and that their use may have ancient roots. The questions of when and how these artificial memory systems originated, and what impact their use had on the evolution of human cognition, remain largely unanswered. In order to answer this question, we investigate the possibility of identifying artificial memory systems from the archaeological record in the absence of functional evidence through the use of new statistical tools and empirical evidence. So without knowing for sure what these markings say, assuming they are proto-writing, they try to determine whether or not they are some sort of proto-writing or artificial memory system, as they call them, by mathematics and by using different formula. They have several different criteria, in particular four things that they use: the number of marks present on the artifact, whether or not the artifact gained more marks over long periods of time, how the marks are arranged in relation to each other, and the shape and size of the individual markings themselves. In addition to this, microscopic analysis is used to determine if an artifact was used as a tool or not. If it was a tool, then the marks are more likely to be random and not writing at all. This paper, the one from last summer, summarizes their criteria as sequences of incisions arranged with regular or semi-regular spacing, multiple identifiable changes in the cutting edge, tool or technique used to produce the incision or modification, spatial features implying intentional layout and organization of the markings, and a lack of utilitarian shaping or edge modifications indicative of use. And besides tools, they eliminate some other things with their criteria as well. Applying the aforementioned criteria to Upper Paleolithic objects featuring sequential markings has revealed that a number of them can tentatively be interpreted as potential artificial memory systems, as opposed to other types of human activity, including the production of artifacts with modifications to facilitate hafting, possible musical instruments, adornments, use of bones as tools, or complex funerary practices. In parallel, developments in taphonomic analysis have refined criteria to distinguish between anthropogenic markings produced on bone as opposed to bone surface modifications produced by natural factors. Now, that's not to say this paper is purely empirical. In fact, the authors outright admit that some of this requires, you know, using just a human eye, which makes sense. I mean, these are human markings being seen by other humans. I don't need no statistical analysis to be able to discern that this is a cow. Or maybe a pig. Hell, I don't know, a train. Now, obviously, I'm joking, but I'm doing this to illustrate the point. The manner in which we recognize the potential writing is less scientific than artistic. As the paper puts it, processing this visual information, therefore, becomes a task that involves symbolic thinking, pattern recognition, and memory organization. So they realize that the endeavor starts by eyeballing it, and then they apply math to see if what they believe that they're seeing bears out. And this makes a lot of sense if you think about it. I've interviewed Dr. Martin Sletman in the past, who is an archaeoastronomer and chemical engineer, and he had this to say when we're talking about exactly this sort of thing in regards to Göbekli Tepe's Pillar 43.
It's the same for all science. Okay, so the only difference between speculation and science is statistics. So all science, all good science anyway, will look for trying to rule out chance so that they can support the hypothesis. It all comes down to confidence. Science is based on confidence. And the way that you generate confidence or measure confidence is in terms of statistics. That's why we talk about things like confidence intervals or error bars and that kind of thing. So it's just that's the standard rule of science, is that you try to support your arguments with some kind of statistical estimate.
So both aspects matter, but only one of them makes it science. And of course, this makes sense. So anyway, I'm going to link both of the two papers that are discussing proto-writing down below, so you can look at like the math side of things and whatnot, because I'm not going to go through and discuss all the formula. That stuff gets really, really boring quickly, but it's all available if you're interested down below. I will discuss some of the major artifacts and how they showed up in their evaluation and whether or not they met the criteria to be proto-writing and or not. Whether or not This paper groups the artifacts into three categories: artificial memory systems, butchery, and depictions. So that's proto-writing, butchery, and drawings, basically. And the first artifact is this guy here, a bone found in Spain in 1987 at a site known as Tossal de la Roca. Around 8,000 years old, it has been the subject of this kind of study before, and as new methods became available, it's been evaluated again in this paper, with the first time being back in 1994. It's small, with several marks on both sides, and the paper gives each side its own evaluation. But both sides, while getting somewhat different results, ended up pretty firmly in the artificial memory systems category. The spatial organization gave was half again as confident on side B as side A. Now, the comparisons of the main features of the bone to the other examples of writing, depictions, or butchering shows this bone falling in the writing sides of things again, although it leans towards the depiction sides of things to a degree. To me, the most interesting aspect of it are the possible baselines. They're like the lines on a sheet of ruled paper, these guides for keeping one's writing organized into straight lines. The spatial organization evaluation was half again as confident in side B as it was in side A. But, you know, sometimes side B just has the better song. I don't know what to tell you. But the fact of the matter is this first artifact is a very good candidate for being an artificial memory system, a form of counting or tally stick, as they're called. Second, we have this bone fragment from the border cave in South Africa. Broken from a baboon fibula, it's about 40,000 years old, and it looks like a damn counting stick. I don't know what to tell you. It's found in the early 1970s, and it has been the subject of this kind of speculation before. The paper categorizes it as an example of proto-writing, another alternate memory system. And both the spacing and the grouping showed this, and they were confident in the main features corresponding to writing as well. It looks like a tally stick, and probably is a tally stick. As many as 5 different tools were used to make the marks on the bone, indicating either careful planning or prolonged creation of it is possible. Eyes and math both agree, and I think you can see now why I spent so much time babbling about counting at the beginning of this video. This is what we're going to be looking at a lot of the time. Next, we have this reindeer bone from France, known as the Labatut reindeer metapodial. And it's about 30,000 years old and was found about 100 years ago. It bears those tally marks that we are quickly becoming accustomed to and scored similarly to the other artifacts I've discussed already. The size, shape, spacing, and similarities to the other forms of writing line up. As many as 4 different tools were used to carve the marks on it, and these tools apparently were not resharpened as the process of carving was carried out. And as you can see, like the border cave bone, it looks like a tally stick. And this isn't surprising. Again, we don't know what language they spoke. We don't know very much at all, but we can say they probably were using numbers to a degree. You would like to think so. It is important to mention that the next paper doesn't find itself so limited by this. We find ourselves at the cave of Lajeri Bas next. The site has 2 artifacts, with one being more exciting than the other. And that artifact shows a different criteria they used to determine what qualified as a depiction, despite having possible writing on it. That first artifact is the Lajeri Bas disc, and it was found in 1863, and it's approximately 14,000 years old, with an image of a deer on either side. When a thread is passed through the hole in the center and the disc is spun, the optical illusion that occurs makes it seem like the doe is leaping into action. Known as a thaumatrope, this type of novelty toy is believed to have been invented in the early 19th century. So these artifacts are rewriting the history of this thaumatrope toy thing, not just rewriting the history of writing. At any rate, this is a pretty interesting artifact. The little sunray things, like inverted sunray chevron Vs, those don't seem to have been evaluated as a possible form of tally marks or anything like that, which was interesting because they did delineate in an artifact we'll see shortly. They did delineate between the markings and the art. So it's interesting they chose not to do that with this artifact, but it does show heavily in the depiction side of things. Surprise, surprise, it's got a picture of a deer on both sides. And alternatively, from the same aubry or cave shelter, we have this rib bone with the type of markings on it that we've long become accustomed to, and the bone is from the same period as the disc and was found at the same time, but it's clearly less artistic, and the data shows this as well, with the artifact assigned a very high probability for being an artificial memory system. And this isn't surprising. The bone looks to have been carved very methodically and carefully, with both sides showing organized rows of marks, clear categories that make it less ambiguous. The next piece we're going to be discussing is interesting not so much due to its appearance, but its age. A staggering 60,000 years old and attributed to Neanderthal. This hyena bone was found in the 1970s and it looks similar to the other counting stick type artifacts we've seen, so the evaluation of it won't be terribly surprising. But it coming from a Neanderthal site should be a little surprising. It's from a site known as Les Pradelles in France, I'm sure I pronounced that exactly perfectly, and it has too few markings for some of the forms of analysis, but it scores very highly in others, and it looks promising as a form of proto-writing. Now the fact that it's Neanderthal is not just interesting because it's Neanderthal, but it's also because The paper's authors are very clear to point out, counting isn't something that's inherent in the human mind even. There are some cultures that don't have numbers in their language. They don't see this in children of some different hunter-gatherer societies, don't learn to count as part of like learning and stuff. There's a whole lot of different stuff. It's kind of outside the purview of this paper. But again, the links are down below, so I encourage you to check it out if you're interested in that. But that does make it very interesting because it shows that this Neanderthal society quite possibly had developed the ability to count, and that is actually a big deal. Staying in France, but moving up about 15,000 years closer to us, we have this antler fragment from the site called Le Marche. Obviously, there's a couple of horsies on this thing, but there's also a ton of markings made in meticulous patterns. As I mentioned earlier, the art and dots have been separated for analysis, and the dots look promising. In fact, there appear to be subsets of dots, and this was explored in the paper. It seems like a piece of art incorporated some form of notation, with the art and writing actually showing a good possibility of being designed together or being made to work together aesthetically. Now, it was supposed that the artist tried to fit as many dots in as small of an area as possible, which is kind of interesting considering how old it is. It couldn't have been influenced by Pac-Man or sardines, so you wonder why they come up with the idea of packing all these dots into a tiny spot. At the Solutre archaeological site in France, they didn't eat power pellets, though. They ate rhinoceros. Apparently, anyway, as the next artifact we'll look at is a rib bone from one of those monstrous things. I'll give you three guesses what kind of markings it's covered in. Pictograms and rows of complex symbols? Hell no, more tally marks! Now, this one passes most tests easily, but the slightly haphazard manner some of the markings were made with does seem to push the artifact closer to butchery when the primary components are compared to the control samples. It's still a good candidate. It has been included in many other studies like this before for obvious reasons. It's just so hard to determine whether or not a symbol is a form of an artificial memory system. But tally marks like these are less difficult to interpret, assuming that they were actually meant to encode information at all. Now, the last two artifacts that I'll cover in this paper are both from Aubry Blanchard, a site that I have covered before. And both of these are about 35,000 years old, and both are rib bones, which have what could well be tally marks. One of these, however, is quite possibly marked this way just due to it being used for flint knapping. However, the other one is given a very high possibility of being an artificial memory system. Anytime utilitarian function is shown on one of these artifacts, the paper's authors become a lot more skeptical for obvious reasons. You can accidentally make the letter A or make the letter V just by randomly swinging around a piece of flint if you're napping, right? And there are other artifacts in this paper, but these are a good place to start, as most of the ones that I've highlighted are quite possibly, if not probably, some form of notation. Counting, most likely. And having this under our belts, we can confidently evaluate the most recent paper, which focuses on the Aurignacian culture and several sites in southwest Germany known as Swabian Aurignacian, which is a small group of caves where all 260 artifacts that this paper evaluates were found in. Now, many of these artifacts bear the same kind of markings we have been seeing so far, but some of them are a little bit different. And the paper's authors focused on mobile artifacts, which means stuff that could be carried with them, and whether or not these were artificial memory systems. To quote the authors, in earlier studies, selected artifacts were analyzed microscopically and experimentally to demonstrate that so-called artificial memory systems might have their beginnings already in the late Middle Paleolithic, associated with Neanderthals of 70,000 to 40,000 years ago. Namely, a few mobile artifacts, raven and hyena bones, bear regular incisions, potentially encoding numerical information. Some traces of artificial memory systems or exograms might even reach back to the lower Paleolithic several hundred thousand years ago. Having said this, there is a clear increase in the number of mobile artifacts with geometric markings in assemblages of the upper Paleolithic period. Moreover, the codes of artificial memory systems seem to become more complex towards the end of this period. How to exactly quantify and model this complexification remains unclear. We here provide openly published data and computational tools to assess the complexification of sign sequences produced by humans over evolutionary time. Now, this is a pretty profound statement, but the use of words like complexification has complexified this here statement. But there's a couple of really cool things there. One of them is he's saying this could be a very long time ago, like hundreds of thousands of years ago, that people started doing this sort of thing using artificial memory systems. And the other thing he's saying is they're going to be using data gained from other papers. Like all the skeptical people have been saying, this isn't the first time this kind of thing's been done. But we already know that. We just talked about another paper. In general, our study builds on research applying computational tools to pin down the statistical properties of human language in comparison to ancient sign systems as well as animal communication systems. More specifically, it relates to archaeological investigations of Paleolithic signs on mobile objects as well as cave art, sometimes explicitly linked to numerical cognition. Also, experimental work emerges to understand how humans perceive the geometric patterns on mobile artifacts and parietal art, and to clarify their semiotic status. This is embedded more generally into experimental work on the evolution of semiotic systems in the lab, as well as the cognitive biases shaping them. Our study can thus be seen as part of an emerging field of research, evolutionary semiotics. Now, this here newfangled evolutionary semiotics is also outside the purview of this here video, but it is pretty interesting. It's basically that semiotics means signs or signing, or like the process of interpreting, you could call it symbolism, right? But they like the word sign for some reason. At any rate, they believe that like biology is like on a cellular level, even this begins, and it does make sense. I mean, you have like reproductive stuff and whatnot. Anyway, it does get pretty interesting. It gets pretty out there, but that's how they couch this paper. So it's important to note, and sometimes you'll see the word signs and that's what they're meaning. And it's also important from a psychological perspective, just to realize that they're looking at this, not just from a purely archaeological perspective, but from a more overarching biological one. And like the previous paper, they were careful to differentiate between stray marks and things that could be made for more utilitarian purposes and things that look to have been made for aesthetic purposes or potentially things that were made as part of an artificial memory system. As they put it, we are interested in the sign sequences carried by these mobile artifacts. As the most general definition of a sign in the context of archaeological material, we propose a modification of a surface which can be perceived and interpreted by an intelligent viewer. Note that this includes bite marks, cut marks, utilitarian manipulations, etc. In our analyses, we restrict this further to intentional and non-utilitarian signs. Intentional means that they are not the byproduct of another activity, like cut marks as a result of butchering. Non-utilitarian means that there is no indication that these surface modifications had purely practical functions relating to craftsmanship, like holes attaching ropes, or other circular incisions to help with hafting of spear points. The inventory of sign types includes basic shapes such as lines, points, crosses, but also more complex patterns such as stars, grid patterns, and zigzag lines. Now, just like the last paper, it's linked below, and I'm not going to discuss all the math and stuff and make it all super duper boring, but they do go through a different set of criteria here as well. Now, if you're interested in the specifics, I encourage you to check out the link below. But for now, the samples were compared against known examples of ancient and modern writing, and information density, uncertainty of information portrayed, repetition rates, predictions for entropy and density rates, as well as some of the other criteria that the previous paper used. Despite being on well-trodden ground, there is a lot of new information here. Okay, let's talk about the artifacts they used. In 2008, this undetermined bone was discovered in the Hohlfels cave. Dating, like everything else in this study, to around 35,000 to 40,000 years ago, it has several marks on it that look like possible tally marks, and crosses and chevron shapes as well. It was given a good possibility of being an artificial memory system, as statistically it has a number of markings and distribution that their formula expected to see for the signs, as they call them. It is less robust than the other artifacts we'll cover in this paper because it has a limited number of markings which doesn't allow it to be analyzed in as many different ways. Second, we have this bone spatula, or perhaps a smoothing tool, found in the Vogelherd cave in the latest excavations there between 2005 and 2012. Far more neatly spaced and bearing numerous cross patterns and other basic symbols, this is another good candidate for being an early artificial memory system. It is similar to the other artifacts in the study in the regards that the analysis that was applied to it shows it to be less like a modern language, but also not a random assortment of markings or ones without some meaning. While it is possible that these marks have no meaning, the statistical analysis makes that less likely. Following that artifact, we have another from the Vogelherd cave, and it is also designated a spatula or smoothing tool. It is similarly marked as well, indicating this was probably a design or symbol used for this type of tool, some sort of convention. Testing similarly, there are several other artifacts from this cave that look similar and test similarly as well. As a matter of fact, the Vogelherd cave is one of the most fruitful places for finding these sort of potential artificial memory systems from tens of thousands of years ago. And we'll return to that cave in a little bit. But first, let's look at this bone pendant from guys in Klosterkirchen. Despite its small number of markings, it tested fairly well spatially and in regards to predicted levels of encoded information. Now, to be honest, things like this make me a little bit more skeptical of the entire paper, as this is just a handful of marks, right? And it doesn't seem very righty looking to me, but you know what? Math is math, and they tell me I should be less skeptical than I am. Now, the next few artifacts really drive home the difference between this paper and the previous one, so I'll spend a little bit more time on them. First, we have this mammoth figurine from the Vogelherd cave again. It's well-crafted for its age, you know, 35 to 40,000 years old, like everything else, and it's covered in crosses mostly, with other markings also present but less prominent. The paper discusses the possibility of meaning here. Given the variable nature of meanings associated with signs in human culture, it is not surprising that there is a multitude of hypotheses about the meaning of Paleolithic signs in general, and the Swabian Jura in particular. For instance, crosses found on mammoth and horse figurines have been interpreted as either simple reflections of fur, counting devices, or symbols of ritual killings. The latter are also found in association with hunter-gatherer cultures in historic times. This is demonstrated by the whole Fels Venus, with its numerous markings that may have some symbolic significance. Another artifact found in the whole Fels cave, it has no crosses, despite being covered in markings. The paper discusses this phenomena. Also, some signs have been preferentially used with certain object types. For example, crosses are some of the most frequently occurring signs. In our sample, however, they never occur on anthropomorph figurines, but rather on zoomorph figurines, especially horses and mammoths, as well as on tools. Inversely, dots occur most frequently on anthropomorph figurines and also zoomorph figurines, especially felines, but never on tools. Note that this cannot be due to material constraints, as both figures and some tools are carved out of ivory and have surfaces which allow for application of either crosses or dots. Hence, there is a deliberate choice behind adorning humans and felines with dots, but other animals like horse and mammoth as well as tools with crosses. The members of Swabian Ordination culture have certainly handed down such conventions over generations of ivory carvers. Otherwise, the occurrence of these statistical patterns over 10,000 years would be extremely unlikely. This makes those small differences pretty profound if you think about it. Generations over thousands of years using the same symbols on different kinds of tools and different kinds of artwork and not using them on others. The fact is, if you used artifacts to guide your making of the next artifacts, that would make it an artificial memory system in the strictest sense, right? I mean, you know that crosses don't belong on this kind of artifact and dots don't belong on that kind of artifact because the last one told you so. So right off the bat, this is pretty interesting when you think about it. And this leads me to the final artifact that I'll cover from this paper, the one that made the cover of pretty much every article and probably in my thumbnail too. The Otterant of Gleisenklosterkirchen. Covered in dots, chevrons, and dashes, all arranged in fairly neat rows, this artifact has long drawn attention from researchers looking for early ancestors to writing. In this paper we read, in comparison, for the material of the Swabian Origination, there are no descendant sign systems which could be used to infer their exact functions of the earlier signs. In the case of particular artifacts like the Otterant, it has long been argued that these constitute deliberate numerical representations, as the sequences are bundled to similar lengths, and these lengths are not simply the outcome of the material constraints. In combination with the anthropomorph figurine, this would constitute a numero-ideographic representation. However, in contrast to proto-cuneiform, there is currently no evidence of higher numbers being encoded with separate, more complex signs. So they have no way to discern these symbols, but they recognize that they're organized and quite possibly numerical, probably some sort of proto-language, but lacking in any sort of symbols that would delineate higher numbers Exactly the kind of thing you'd expect in proto-writing, right? The paper summarizes its findings thusly. Our analyses show that these sequences are clearly statistically different from those generated with modern-day writing systems to represent spoken languages. However, they have a very similar statistical fingerprint as the earliest numeric and numero-ideographic proto-cuneiform tablets stemming from the Uruk V period of 3500 to 3350 BC. Moreover, the Aurignacian sequences were not indiscriminately applied to different objects. Rather, ivory figurines carry the sequences of highest information density, independent of material constraints such as volume and preservation. The hunter-gatherers of the Swabian Aurignacian have hence developed a sign system with some incipient design features also found in writing, that is, an inventory of different sign types and their linear arrangement, but lacking other design features. It remains hard, or impossible, to prove that Aurignacian sign systems served the same numero-ideographic functions as proto-cuneiform. Moreover, there is a stark contrast between them. Proto-cuneiform developed into a full-blown writing system, representing the Sumerian language within the subsequent 1,000 years. The sign sequences of the Swabian Aurignacian, on the other hand, were stable in terms of information density for 10,000 years, and then disappear. This is sad when you think about it, a form of proto-writing that was used for 10,000 years and just kind of withered on the vine and died off. But it is extremely interesting as well. I mean, here we have a very good possibility of early numbers, of early writing. I don't think it's a stretch to say that there is new information in this paper. And I don't think it's a stretch to say that this is much more scientific than some of the other work that has been done. These are all kind of building on each other. These are all many different angles of looking at the same things. And a lot of these artifacts have been examined numerous times in the past. And one of the people that you see that's been doing, that he referenced over and over again, is Alexander Marshak. You don't really see Chantel Wolkiewicz referenced very much, but I covered both of them recently in a video. Their work, I think, is important to mention right here.
Now, the bone from the Abri Blanchard is a prime example. On one piece of bone, in an area about the size of a wristwatch, he made 69 tiny marks. This hunter was doing something that nobody had expected. And my analysis indicated that this seemed to be a lunar calendar. What he was doing was notating the passage of time, notating the phases of the moon as the moon waxed and waned. In other words, this piece of bone was an abstract of phenomena that was occurring out in the real world.
And that research was then built on by French ethnologist and astronomer Chantal Jegiz-Wolkiewicz. Sure, I pronounced that perfectly.
He didn't realize that the serpentine form is the result of observations being made from the same spot throughout the entire observation period.
Sitting at the foot of the cliff, like the Paleolithic sculptor, she recorded the measurements necessary for her calculations. The researcher then drew a chart that showed, day by day, the height of the moon in the sky and the point on the horizon where it set. One by one, the coordinates she obtained with her astronomical calculations matched the tiny cupules, or cup marks, carved on the bone. True, it was not a perfect match, and some lunar phases were missing. But the general outline of the two figures is strikingly similar.
I mean, here we have not only different symbols for different phases of the moon, but they're laid out in a manner that, while statistically would not line up with any proto-language or anything like that, it lines up with the path of the moon. So it would fail a lot of these language recognition type of things, I would imagine, based on that, the information, the spacing and of the different things and the way that they're designed in a figure eight type of pattern instead of laid out in rows or neatly categorized. However, this is an accounting stick. I don't have to say, I don't know what this X means. I don't know what this V means. In my opinion, this is very clear. This is very obvious. This is an artificial memory system and one that we can decode, not just look at and say, I wonder what these, I think this is tally marks, which, don't get me wrong, that's an important part of this. But it's interesting to me because this is 15, 20 years ago that this was first brought to the public. And they're still saying, well, I don't know if they had these artificial memory systems. And this was right there. This is another ordination artifact. You could pick this thing up and from where it was into Germany. You could, well, Germany launched artillery shells further during the big one there in WW2. So it's not very far. Okay. Same fucking culture. Anyway, I think it's really interesting to contemplate this idea, as I started with, hard data is why you would need a written language. And the moon, astronomy, paths of the stars, these are things that were very important to ancient people and very much would require hard data. And I think the smoking gun shows us that as far as proof of an ancient writing, ancient proto-writing, ancient artificial memory system, ancient signs, however, whatever verbiage you want to use, your fancy nomenclature of the day, the bottom line is, this is the one we can, in my opinion, that like prove. It's so much more robust than anything else. Anyway, tell me if you agree or disagree down below. Thank you very much for watching. I hope you found this informative, and I hope that I hope I threaded the needle between informative enough and not like being too lazy with not getting too terribly into the math. But I know I fell asleep when I listened to people babble about formula. I don't want you to do that too. Anyway, I'm going to be in Sedona, Arizona, May 1st through 3rd for the Quest for Ancient Civilizations Conference. A lot of other cool people are going to be there. Going to be a lot of fun. You should check it out down below. Meet up with me, shake my hand, have a beer, play Fortnite, whatever you want to do. If you appreciate this kind of content, it does take a lot of time to make. There's links to support the channel down below. I have a second channel where if you like watching if you like watching the debunkers get held to account, that's going to be where most of that stuff's going to happen from now on. If you aren't certain, when you see a thumbnail and you see my face in it, if it's got the little blue border, the blue border is this channel. The little red border is going to be the other one. So you can tell nice educational Dan from big old Mino Dan. Anyway, thanks again for watching. Really appreciate you all so much. Love you to death. Hope to see you again soon.